We are WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are in a baseball week here. The Orioles about to fly away into even worse weather before it's all over with. But torrid baseball being played here. I'm wearing my Pappas shirt. I can encourage anybody to get over to Pappas, any of the locations. Sure, get the crab cakes, get the Greek salad, but don't sleep on that chicken franchise. I don't even know how to pronounce it, but it's delicious. Get it. It's like French, but just point at it. They'll tell you what it is. Delicious. Brought that home with some rice pilaf. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery are sending me out with these Pac-Man scratch-offs. I'm trying to practice how to do the Pac-Man thing on our screen. We're going to be at Fadley's on the 26th. We're going to be at Greenmount Bowl next Wednesday. David Richardson up there, he put Baltimore Positive logos and pictures of Luke Jones all over, like, you know, the 10th frame, and it's like crazy out there. But we're going to be there all afternoon next Wednesday. I hope he has duck pins. I'm crossing my fingers. He's a Dundalk guy. We've talked about this before. That's on Wednesday. Then on Friday, Luke and I will be together at Fadley Seafood. It's all brought to you by Liberty Pure Solutions, as well as Jiffy Lube and our friends at the Maryland Lottery. As I sip some Royal Farms coffee out of the Cole Roofing mug, bleary-eyed Luke Jones, who's just got baseball and baseball and more baseball, and then they come back and play 1 o'clock games, and then the weather, and I think the weather's going to hold up, but how are you holding up? I mean, does your neck hurt? Am I going to have to get you for the neck brace for all the hitting that's going on here? I mean, you're whiplash from all these hits, man.
They're certainly swinging the bats well. They of course, we talked about the first couple games of the season where they put up, 24 runs. They had a week there where they didn't hit the ball, and since then, well, they're swinging the bats, and they're swinging the bats with authority, leading the league in home runs at this point. And
they even
really
moved the fence back, by the way.
Sure. Well, but keep in mind, they only moved the left field wall back. The rest of Camden Yards is still pretty hitter-friendly as it pertains to being able to hit the ball out of the ballpark. But we've even seen some guys clear the big left field wall. So they're swinging it well. For all the talk about Austin Hayes and, you know, to a lesser extent, Anthony Santander hasn't swung the bat all that well since the first few games of the season. But, boy, they've got some guys swinging it. And it's fun to see. And obviously the Brewer series was choppy. They came away with the victory on Sunday. And the Minnesota Twins, the story on them had actually been that they pitched pretty well, had swung the bats and you know, a team batting average under 200 going into this series. And, well, the Orioles have terrorized their pitching as well. So it's been a fun couple nights at the ballpark. And we've talked about it. I mean, the Orioles, it's been choppy at times. But overall, when you're talking about a team that's already 11-6 and already on pace to do special things in a way that they did last year, maybe with more upside. In fact, I'd say definitely with more upside, especially if they get, you know, Kyle Bradish and John Means back here in the not too distant future. Things are good. And certainly they have really swung the bats over the course of this series, as, you know, they win the first couple games by pretty comfortable margins.
Dare I say, there's so many storylines, right? You and I have talked about whether it's Norfolk, whether it's new ownership, whether it's David Rubenstein and Cal Ripken playing out television. I don't know what that was. It's a little social media joke, or maybe it speaks to Rubenstein's sense of humor or Cal's sense of humor, which I've known Cal 35 years. Cal's got a sense of humor, and I used to tell people that back in the 90s, like, he's probably a lot more personable if you knew him. I mean, I watched him wrestle with Butch on the floor of the, you know, of the locker room there that I hope to enter at some point when I'm off of review. By the way, Brett Hollander said his dog has a press pass on the air. I'm not kidding. I listened to this shows I listened to the broadcast, even though it was 9-2. What's your favorite part of this? I'm trying to figure out my favorite part's new ownership, right? And the possibilities that even my press credentials under review at this point after 18 years. So like the thought of a new day, fans coming back, 35,000 people there on Sunday. That's my overriding part of all of this, is just watching maybe how the broadcast change at Ben McDonald, and it becomes fun, and whatever the engagement level is, and the Homer hose that's now like a hydration. I mean, Dude, it's a soap opera. It's a daily, it's truly a soap opera. And if your favorite player becomes Colton Cowser because he caught fire for 2 weeks, you know, right now, or you're into the Jackson Holiday train, or you got your number two, or you're already invested. Every time I see a 35 jersey, I think Messina. Maybe it's because I'm doing this crazy documentary, but there's a whole different 35 going on. I mean, it's like pinch me. So some mornings I get up and I do this with you, even with my wife, and I'm like, they've never been like this. So every day I'm a pinch me, but what's your favorite part of this story?
I mean, my favorite part of it right now is that it's a really good team to watch on a nightly basis. Everything else you mentioned speaks to the ceiling, speaks to it being even better across the board. And that's exciting, but that's still an unknown. We still don't know if David Rubenstein is going to be a great owner. If you ask me to predict right now, is he going to be better than 30 years of the Angelos family? I'm going to say yes, because that bar was so extraordinarily low that you really have only one way to go. But
historically,
in the meantime, but in the meantime, you have this team that, by the way, won 101 games last year, had the best record in the American League last year, and has since added Corbin Burns to the top of their rotation, and has Jackson Holiday in the majors. And I get it. He's off to a slow start, but it just speaks to, you're getting better. You're adding. You still have guys at AAA who have a chance to contribute to this team this year. And you just look at the possibilities off the field and what that can mean. I mean, it's just, you hear the term the sky's the limit a lot in sports, and it's such a cliche that a lot of times doesn't really mean anything. But it really does feel that way for the Orioles in so many different ways. I mean, about the only way you wouldn't say that is, okay, it's not a massive market like LA or New York. You know, they're not going to have a $300 million payroll, but they certainly can have a higher payroll, and they certainly can make smarter decisions off the field as it pertains to business and television and all these different things. So, but for me, it still begins with where it began 5 years ago, or now 5.5 years ago, when Mike Elias arrived, recognizing that this needs to be rebuilt. This needs to be rebuilt in a way from a baseball standpoint that it hadn't been, you know, frankly. It was always start, stop, and how do we, you know, what's the path to 85 wins if everything goes perfectly? I mean, that was basically the late 90s through 2011. So, but to see this be fully committed to from a baseball standpoint, and now fast forward to the present, David Rubenstein and the new group coming in, evaluating everything that needs to be evaluated, hopefully improving everything that needs to be improved upon. That's still the unknown. That's still, there's excitement about that, and there's optimism to your point, and I share in that. But in the meantime, it's a really, really good baseball team we're getting to watch on a nightly basis, with room to improve, with room to grow. And that's what's really exciting about this team. And that doesn't mean that they go from 101 wins to 110. You know, that's baseball doesn't work in a clean, tidy way like that all the time. But I think just in terms of true talent level, in terms of experience, in terms of not just making the playoffs, but now knowing what to expect, I mean, it's great. But everything else you mentioned, as far as the nightly soap opera of it, I mean, that's why I think people love baseball to begin with. Major League Baseball, meaning you play every night. It's not like football where you have to wait around for a week. It's not like even the NBA or the NHL where, okay, you'll play some back-to-backs, but it's generally three,
four games
a week.
That's why I say soap opera. General Hospital came on every day at 3 o'clock, and that's
why
people are into it.
You can count on it.
You know, Dynasty was only once a week. Dallas was only once a week. You know what I mean? Like, so there, even your wrestling used to be once a week until they made it 7 days a week on tape and whatever. But baseball was the originator of all day, every day, from the minute springtime comes until the leaves change, you know, like, and for my father, your father, it's the reason we're sort of here. And all of these years where you just intellectually look at it. I intellectually looked at this in 2006 and thought I was better off being thrown out than being allowed in if all they were going to do is lose more. Like, it was awful. And now it's all changed. And I even said to my wife, like, we were just talking over in the car, and she sort of has followed it, but not as much because she's been into some other things like, you know, solar eclipses and different things like that. And I told her, I said, the Yankees got off to a really good start and they're good. I said, but the Orioles are better. And she's like, do you mean that? And I'm like, oh, yeah. The Orioles have guys that are going to get better. I don't know where, I mean, I said to her, look, Colton Cowser's not going to hit 440, you know, but he might hit 318. You know, I mean, he might be that kind of player. He certainly is of the pedigree. I even said to her, I'm like, yeah, he's not Rutschman. He's like, I said, you know how bad they had to be to get one ones? They only were the fourth or fifth worst team to stink bad enough to get Colton Cowser. And they're good at doing this. They're good at picking players. They're good at developing players. And as much as we'll bring our flowers for Eric DaCosta, and you and I talk draft down at Fadley's, we'll talk about it next week. You're going to be out there, and we're going to monitor what's going on. And by the way, our 25th anniversary documentary is coming out at 5:08 on the 25th on Thursday, so we'll make sure you're looking for that. But we talk about them as, you know, Eric's a genius. He's been at this 25 years. And I'm on the record on draft day, before, during, after, liar's luncheon, before, during, after, that Eric DaCosta told me about Mike Elias and Sig Meidel. I had never heard of them. And he is the one who facilitated sitting down with John Angelos and telling John Angelos, you should talk to this guy, Mike Elias. You know, so I would just say the geniuses and how they study the game and how they do all of this. DaCosta's never moved. You know, Ozzie's here. It's unprecedented. I mean, we talk about this every time we ever went to combines, every time we go anywhere near draft stuff, how they have a unique situation here and how they evaluate talent and how they see it. Who else is doing this in baseball that's drafting, first off, being bad enough to get one of the top five players and then getting them to the big leagues again and again and again? Who else is doing this as well? Maybe the Astros did it a couple years ago, but like, I'm seeing Buxton in town, right? And I'm seeing, you know, great players come through. Bobby Witt came through last week. Pirates have a player. When we see the Reds, they have an, you know, an all-world player. And a lot of these guys are Caribbean guys in different places. I mean, Ohtani, he comes from Asia, right? So who else is doing this as well as Mike Elias? Would you say there's anybody the last 5 years? Is it Moneyball, but Elias Ball? And are we going to write books about this 5 years from now?
I mean, they have to win in October to really, you know, to really make it look truly great, truly special. But yeah, I mean, we've seen lengthy rebuilds worked out. I mean, the Cubs did it a decade ago. The Astros did it and are still an elite team, although this year not looking quite as much. But we've seen teams do this, but it does feel like the Orioles are operating from a higher hit rate than where we've seen some of these other teams do it at a really high level. Now, I think I would caution and say the sustainability. I mean, look at it, like the model that Tampa has had, where they've spent next to no money for going on 15, 20 years now, but for the most part have been good. Now, a couple years here and there where they weren't as good. But the point is, they've been a team that has sustained being a playoff contender, even if it hasn't led to World Series championships. And that's where
and
I
again,
said,
again, they haven't stunk. They haven't had a top 10 pick in a while, right?
Right, exactly. So that, and you just kind of hit on it. For me, the real, and I don't say this to be dismissive of anything they're doing, but the real test, the real calling card will be, how do they do when they start to pick in the middle of a round? You know, like for example, they drafted Enrique Bradfield last year with a pick that was later in the first round. It wasn't a top five pick. So we'll see how he develops. Is he their starting center fielder replacing Cedric Mullins in a couple years? We'll see. That doesn't mean that must happen to justify or to validate what they're doing. My point is, let's see how it looks long-term when they're in the midst of being a good team and not picking as early. But that said, and this is where I'll stress and give them the compliments, it hasn't just been the top five picks. Gunnar Henderson was a second round pick. Jordan Westberg was the very end of the first round. So, you know, they've drafted guys that weren't top five picks. They've drafted guys that any other team in baseball, save for maybe a few, could have drafted. And those players have also become really, really good. I mean, Gunnar Henderson, you know, is the kind of guy that is profiling to be an MVP candidate on an annual basis. I mean, that's special. So yeah, we can talk about Rutschman 1-1. We can talk about Jackson Holliday 1-1. We can talk about Colton Cowser 5th overall. Heston Kerstad was 2nd overall. Those picks, fine. And by the way, there are plenty of teams that have top five picks that don't hit on those guys even. So, but for
well,
me,
the Kerstad thing didn't smell good 2 years ago, in the same way that Sergio Kindle, when a guy gets sick, gets ill, gets injured, you know, I mean, I always go back to Brian Taylor. You know what I mean? Like, I it just when
and
that happens.
And that's where, and that is the cautionary tale that there's also some luck involved in this. There's also some good fortune involved in this. I mean, go back to the Jackson Holiday draft. We mentioned this about a week ago when he was called up. There was plenty of debate at that point in time whether 1-1 should be Jackson Holiday or Drew Jones, the son of Andrew Jones, you know, the multi-time Gold Glove center fielder that a lot of people believe should be in the Hall of Fame. And you see where how it's played out for those two. Jackson Holiday's in the majors, albeit struggling and scuffling right now at the beginning of his major league career. Meanwhile, Drew Jones hurt his shoulder almost immediately after signing, was hurt all last year for them, and he's still at low A ball. Now, he's 20 years old. That doesn't mean he's not going to develop and become a really good player at some point. But the good fortune, the luck element, and that doesn't mean I'm not saying the Orioles didn't make the right decision, because I think it's pretty obvious they did. But the point is that could have gone the other way if you're talking about an injury, something rotten that happens. You mentioned Sergio Kindle. Look, would Sergio Kindle become the next Terrell Suggs if he never falls down the flight of stairs? Probably not. But he probably would have had a heck of a lot better career than he did when that happened. And some of that might have been character, might have been some red flags that maybe they didn't pick up on. Who knows? But the point is, there are a lot of elements to this that, as much as you try to make it scientific, as much as you try to have a process that's foolproof, and as much as you have good people in place, there's still the human element. There's still art involved in this. So that's where, for me, I want to see what it looks like long term when you aren't picking in an advantageous spot every year. But that said, the track record suggests they should continue to do really well in that regard. And that's where it is uncanny. And that's where it is exciting that, yeah, if they're winning a World Series at some point in the next few years, yeah, there'll be a book written about them, as there should be. So it's exciting. But in the meantime, you know, we're getting ahead of ourselves with some of those big picture questions. Got a team that's, you know, already 5 games above 500 and another series win, getting ready to go back out on the road again. And I will point out, though, questions about pitching. And
yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about Tyler Wells, right? I
mean, yeah,
that's been the biggest thing since the last thing. And we're all in agreement that Irwin, you know, it is what it is, right? I mean, he's a fifth. They'll figure it out. Rodriguez looked good the other night. Burns struggled early. I mean, if you're getting that every fifth and sixth day, right? Because you have two guys that are dudes in the top, they're going to hold their water, but it puts more pressure. You have to win those games, and maybe you don't have to have 15 hits and 13 runs to do it. But the idea is, you know, this is for Kramer, who's getting the ball now and going to be counted on in a bigger way. And I guess there's the other part of, well, you know, Means is throwing the baseball right now, right? Bradish is throwing the baseball right now. So I don't know how close they are, and it's not like they have to go out and trade somebody. It's April 15th, right?
Right.
But losing guys right now, this is we're a long way from where we were. Cal's buying the team. Rubenstein's coming in. They get Burns, and look at what the rotation looked like when Lamar was preparing to play Patrick Mahomes, to what it looks like on April 20th. And that's baseball. As we sit here 3 months later and talk about it, everything you talk about in January and those hopes and dreams, they're still trying to like sort of piece it all together.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I think the Tyler Wells, first of all, I don't think it's at all something that prompts panic, you know, should force, you know, anyone to be pushing the panic button, but because of what you just said, Brandon Hyde's initial comments, it does sound like this is more precautionary. Of course, many times when you're talking about situations where you're a more concerning elbow or shoulder issue, they tend to be optimistic publicly at first, but it sounds like it was more a case of had some soreness that he didn't bounce back from quite as quickly. So they decided to be extra cautious here. Look, John Means making his fourth rehab start and was up to 62 pitches his last time out. He's getting close. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be next week, but it feels like the next couple weeks, you know, this rehab start and maybe one or two more after that at most. And then you're going to be talking about him being ready. Kyle Bradish pitched at Bowie on Tuesday night. He threw 40, you know, he got over 40. I think he was 44 pitches. Tossed 3 scoreless innings, had 4 strikeouts. You know, reports from Bowie said that he was at 94, 95, 96 with the fastball, which is pretty normal for him. Big test will be, How does he feel Wednesday? How does he feel Thursday? Now, how does he feel his next time out? But the point is, we're 2 months out from Mike Elias announcing that, and he's still throwing, and he's now pitching in a live game environment for the first time since, what, game one of the division series last October. So he's gotten further along than I think some of the biggest skeptics expected him to when you hear UCL injury. So we'll see. That doesn't mean he's going to throw 100 innings this year or 130 innings this year, but he's closer to returning now than you would have thought a month ago or 2 months ago. And I don't just mean literally with the timeline. I just mean in terms of how he's feeling, you know, how he's progressing. So,
well, Preakness is a month away.
We'll see.
If on Preakness, both of those guys are in the rotation and Wells just had a little sore elbow and they're bringing him back and he's at the bottom of the rotation now. And we're talking about a whole different thing, especially if Burns is carrying 6 2/3 and Rodriguez is coming back with 6 or 7 the next night. You know, that certainly changes things if they can do that, get to Cano, get to the bullpen, you get to Kimbrel, end the game, and not – this is a good problem to have when they're bringing those guys in back-to-back and they're not available on the third day or whatever. It means you won the last couple nights, hopefully, right?
Yeah. Sure. And I, you know, what you pointed out, I'm glad you did, because I even tweeted this after Tuesday night's game, you know, put it out on social media. The Orioles to this point are 8-0 when Corbin Burns and Grayson Rodriguez pitch. You know, that doesn't mean they factored into the decision, but they've won all 8 of those games. Combined margin of 66-24. I mean, they've not just won, they've also scored a lot of runs for those guys. Everyone else starting 3-6, you know, going into Wednesday's finale. So
you got 7 runs up for Rodriguez in the third inning. It's over, right? You got to be over, right?
Yeah. And he was actually a little disappointed with his start from the standpoint of what he had thrown. I think it was 23 pitches through 3 innings because the Twins, you know, they got a couple guys on, but erased on double play balls and first pitch swinging, early count swinging. But then he ran into a little bit of, you know, command issue. Fastball command wasn't as sharp. So he only ended up going 6 innings. When you're at 23 pitches after 3 innings, I'm thinking at that point, he was
CG,
hoping, hey,
baby,
I might be able to go to distance, at least go 7 or 8.
Jim Palmer's watching.
He was a little disappointed. Yeah, he was a little disappointed, but hey, it was fine. He went 6 innings. You know, that was a legit quality start, but it just wasn't as great. And eyeball test wise, it wasn't quite as dominant as we've seen Grayson Rodriguez be, but that's okay. And we said the same thing about Burns. There's the difference. When you have a number one and number two starter who can give you that kind of an effort, even if their fastball command's off, or in the case of Burns, his last time out, you know, wasn't missing quite as many bats as he typically does, you know, and going up against his old team, they're quite familiar with him as much as he was familiar with them, but still giving them a great chance to win. So, you know, the Wells injury, you don't want to see that, because despite his slow start, he can be really important to this pitching staff, whether it's at the back end of the rotation or, and this is where I'd really like to see him fit in, under a scenario where John Means and Kyle Bradish come back, or at least one of them is back and right for the duration of the season, and you add a starting pitcher at the trade deadline or whatever it is. I think Tyler Wells can help you in the back end of that bullpen, which you're going to need more arms. So over the course of the season, it's a long season. You need to have guys you trust that can pitch a 7th, 8th, 9th inning for you. So it's fortunate in that regard, but the early indication is this is more of a precautionary measure, and we'll see how it plays out. In the meantime, we were left guessing who was going to start this time in the rotation, whether, you know, and full disclosure for anyone listening, it's early Wednesday morning as you and I speak. We don't know who's going to start, whether it's going to be a Bruce Zimmerman type, whether they do a bullpen game, whatever it is. But it does line up. It's interesting to point out John Means pitching for Norfolk Wednesday, same day as Tyler Wells' spot in the rotation. So if this last start or this latest start at Norfolk goes well, do we see John Means next week in the rotation? We'll see. I don't think that's a definite. I think you want to make sure he's ready. You don't want to stop that rehab clock and activate him if it's not looking quite like John Means. But the timing of this in mid to late April is better than if Tyler Wells had a sore elbow March 30th. And now you're talking about, So you still have quite a bit of time until Means or Bradish are even in that conversation.
Well, if it means he's only 50, 60 pitch, they're not expecting him to go 95 pitches first time out anyway, no matter what.
Yeah,
right. It would be a bullpen night no matter what. They would say, you got three, four innings, and that's what we're going to do.
And that's why, I even saw some people on social media. I mean, this roster move was made 15 minutes prior to first pitch on Tuesday night. Some people were even saying, well, John Means is scheduled to go for Norfolk on Wednesday. Do they just do that with the idea that, okay, he's only going to throw 70 pitches, but off day on Thursday, so the bullpen, I'm guessing, and again, who knows? We don't know as
it's probably
of
discussed,
this moment.
Right?
I'm guessing that's probably not how you want to operate, though. You want to – that's a err on the side of caution deal. I mean, that's why he was shut down for the first 2.5 months of the offseason. That's why he got off to a late start in the spring.
Yeah, you need John Means in August. You don't need him in April.
Yeah, I mean, whatever the best version of John Means is post-Tommy John surgery, you want that for the second half of the season. So that's where I look at this and say, hey, if it is Bruce Zimmerman, for example, and that was my early guess, and I could be completely wrong on this. So for anyone who's listening, if it is wrong, hey, one of those many times Luke Jones is wrong. But if it is Bruce Zimmerman, he's already on the 40-man roster. He'd be on regular rest. You don't need him to go out there and throw six innings for you anyway. If he can get you through the order at least once, let alone twice, then you can turn it over to the bullpen. And hey, if Ryan O'Hearn's hitting more home runs and Gunnar Henderson is hitting more home runs and Jordan Westberg's hitting more home runs, as we've seen here in recent nights, Colton Cowser, Cedric Mullins. So, by the way, let me give 5 seconds of oxygen to what a phenomenal catch from Cedric Mullins on Monday night. I mean, Superman stuff right there. But
that's one of those ones when you're watching it live, especially like you had a different angle. You're in the press box on the TV angle. The ball looked past him. The minute the ball left the bat, it looked past him.
He ran so far for that one. And some people said that's the best catch they've seen him make. I think back to the catch in Seattle last year, where they won. And then he hit the home run. That to me still probably won. He had one in right center a couple years back where he just ran such a long distance to catch it. Point is, he's made quite a few of these highlight plays, and it's a reminder, even for guys like me who are thinking about the farm and outfield prospects they have, when Cedric Mullins is right physically, and he looks like he's right physically after last year with multiple groin injuries, he's still a really, really valuable part of this baseball team. So, go out and
he's not the guy you want to deal at the trading deadline.
Yeah. I mean, right. Unless,
as Buck would say, he's a pile diver.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still not sure about a long-term contract or anything like that, to be clear, but in the here and now, when he's right physically, boy, he gives the bottom of that order a different dynamic, or you could see him back in the leadoff spot and maybe dropping under to number three, so great to see that. Good to see them swinging the bats well. Another series win, going for a sweep. We'll see what happens with the pitching here. But yeah, the Tyler Wells injury, disappointing. And certainly you don't want to hear elbow inflammation. But let's also see how it plays out a little while before before there's any panic. And I'll remind everyone, Wells was struggling. Maybe he was because of the elbow, but he wasn't exactly pitching at a very high level here. So it's hard to say that this is anything to be panicking over, anything like that. But certainly you don't want to be losing more arms. I mean, we're seeing it around baseball with pitcher injuries. I mean, you can never have too much pitching. So you hope it is what Brandon Hyde said, which was much more precautionary than a grave, serious concern about his health.
Our Luke Jones can be found at Baltimore Luke. He's also going to be featured, toward the end, because he's only been around the last 15 years, and I've been doing this for 40 years, but we're getting there. You're almost at the halfway point. We're going to be releasing our 25th anniversary documentary, No One Listens, Everyone Hears. Big appreciation to Greg Landry, who's enjoying his anniversary in España. We're going to have this thing out at 5:08 p.m. next Thursday night. The Ravens don't draft till 30th. You got all evening to watch it. Luke hasn't even seen it yet. His mom's going to love it. His sister's going to love it. My wife's going to hate it. My kid's going to dive in a hole somewhere when it's all over with. But and all of it brought to you by our friends at Curio Wellness and Foreign Daughter. Reminding you, it's 420 weekend. Wendy and I talked about this because everything's completely on sale. And I've got this product here. I got to promote this because this is the best thing ever, because I'm old and everything hurts. This is a product called Move. It's a balm. Highly recommend this. If you're in Timonium, stop by. It's 35% off on Saturday. You can order online as well. And they've allowed us to put together this video. We're going to release it. Folks can laugh, cry, learn, chuckle. You'll see yourself in there if you've ever met me somewhere on a road trip or been anywhere. We're also going to be getting together twice next week and doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Once in Carroll County, God's country, come on up. Let's get some crab cakes. We're going to be at the bowling alley, hon. We're going to be at Greenmount Bowl. It's better than it sounds. And I love bowling in my back. If I a couple of Advil away, I got 10 in me. I mean, maybe two games, maybe just not 10 pins, just duck pins. I feel like the old lady wheel me up to the lane and let me roll the ball between my legs. We're going to have Pac-Man giveaways from the Maryland Lottery. Also, our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping our water clean, and Jiffy Lube Multicare, keeping the car on the road. You want to find Luke? He's at Baltimore. Luke, you want to find me? I'm at LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, everywhere but TikTok, because China owns that. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.